Hello
Hello
there.
there. Welcome back to another episode of Star Wars in the Galaxy, watching all the Star Wars we can get our hands on. I'm Eli.
I'm Jacob.
And we are back after a few week break, longer than we wanted to be, but we are back. We're back with episode 106. This is season 13, episode, what are we on now? Three, I think? No, not three. We're way ahead of three. Why did I say three? Episode four. I wasn't actually that far off. Four. Episode four of season 13. Of course, we are in our rewatch of season two of Star Wars The Bad Batch. We have two great episodes to talk about today. The two episodes that take place after the fateful events of last episode with the Clone Conspiracy and Truth and Consequences. And those episodes are The Crossing and Retrieval. Both take place on the planet of Ipsidon. And I'm really excited to get into them.
Yeah, couple of very interesting episodes. I have a lot of thoughts. I'm sure you do too, Eli, especially for Retrieval.
Oh yeah, no, I'm very excited about Retrieval. I'm very excited to talk about Retrieval. I'm excited to talk about both of them because both of them have some really interesting and meaty stuff that I don't think we've seen a lot in Star Wars, and I'm very excited to discuss those things. Let's do the summaries. You summarize the crossing, I'll do retrieval.
For sure, yeah. So in The Crossing, the Bad Batch, now minus Echo, go to the planet of Ipsidon, where they are on another mission for Cid because, editorial comment, somehow they are still working for Cid after all the times she screwed them over and hung them out to dry. They are retrieving, or I guess kind of for her, they're opening up this abandoned Ipsum mine, or Ipsium mine. Ipsium is a extremely volatile mineral. It's precious. It's a hot commodity. It's valuable. So of course, Cid wants to get her hands on that for that sweet, sweet, juicy profit. So they venture into the mine. They're retrieving Ipsium. However, the ship gets stolen by a mysterious figure. The Havoc Marauder gets stolen because Wrecker does a bad job of being on the lookout. And the Bad Batch, with no other options, they have to try and journey to the nearest town to find some long range communications and hopefully get their ship back. However, a brutal storm comes and forces them into the caves. While they're in the caves, the Batch starts fighting. Omega is very upset that that Echo is no longer with them. Tech says some insensitive things to her, so she goes off. And while she's off moping, she finds a deposit of Ipsum. However, she gets stuck and is in danger. And Tech comes and finds her. However, they both end up falling through through an underground waterfall and into an underground pool where they are stuck. However,
Give me a sec.
the rest of the batch do come and find them. Hunter and Wrecker do come and find them. They blast their way out with the Ipsum and head off to try and find their ship.
There's one more part of the episode that you
Oh
missed. You
yeah.
didn't.
And
Yeah.
they sorry. And they contact Cid. They find a
Yeah.
long-range communications device. They contact Cid, and wouldn't you know it, Cid just can't be bothered to help them. Sorry, boys. I'm tied up at the moment. She is unavailable. Surprise, surprise. Who could have seen that one coming? So, no Echo, no Marauder, no Cid, and they're stuck on this planet. And that
Yeah,
leaves us straight into Retrieval.
they're stuck on the planet of Ipsidon. We go to the other side of Ipsidon at the start of the episode. The Bad Batch is investigating who exactly stole their ship by tracking Gonki, who's still on the ship. They find out that the guy who stole the ship is a guy named Benny Barrow, who works for this local crime lord named Mako. Mako's thieves both mine the Ipsium, which is of course in mines all over the planet, but also steal things from potential travelers and give it to their overlord Mako, who takes a lot of it for himself. They don't know that yet, but Well, they'll figure that one out. Gives them scraps in return. He rations off food and water to them. He makes them compete to be the top earner or the top stealer, whatever it's called. Overall, it's just a very harsh lifestyle. Omega and the crew capture Benny and then force him to work for them to get the ship back. There are all these espionage winners, even though Benny was the one who stole the ship, he was not ultimately the one to get the top earner. And we see that his buddy Drake got the top earner. He gets an entire bowl of soup only to himself, while the rest of like the dozens of thieves and miners have to share one bowl of soup or whatever that is among themselves. Unfortunately, things start to go downhill as Hunter, Wrecker, and Tech are trying to repair the ship. Some of the thieves see them. Before that, they sent Omega and Benny to try and shut down the ray shield at the North Tower, which Omega tries to do, but she is captured due to a last-minute betrayal by Benny, who doesn't see any other life than the one he's had working as a thief for Mako. And at the last minute, before Omega is about to be thrown over and killed by Mako, Benny reveals something that Omega gave her, which shows the staggering amount of profit that Mako is making on these mines without sharing any of the wealth. And the thieves quickly overthrow and literally throw over Mako, and seize the means of production and become distribute the equity of wealth fairly. And obviously, once they fix their ship, the batch is allowed to leave and sit on the Marauder. And meanwhile, the workers control the means of production, and they're splitting their profits equally. And yes, I'm going to talk about socialism in this episode. You have been warned. So that's this episode. Let's get into both of them.
All right, let's do it. So, the crossing. First off, I like how the Bad Batch is kind of going. It's a little bit of a Western feel, especially in the crossing, which I think is fun. You know, there's the very guitar dominant soundtrack. They're flying in this desert. They're flying over, you know, canyons and bluffs and buttes. They're running from a stampede of animals. They're exploring an abandoned mine. You know, it all has a very Western feel, which I think is pretty fun. It kind of reminds me of The Mandalorian
Yeah, there's
a
some
little
great
bit,
stuff
which I think is cool.
in the aesthetics of the episode. What I really love about this episode is that it start. I love that we don't waste time where Sid gives them the mission and they're like, "Should we do this or not?" Yeah, that's fine, but we need to get back at like after the bomb drop that was the last two episodes. We need to get back into a mission. We need to get back into it quickly. They can have their time to process everything that's happened, and they do. In the episode on the mission. But we are at, for the meantime, we are back. We are instantly dropped into the action. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. It's just, here's what we're doing. We need to do this. Oh, and be careful, there are thieves.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing about this episode, I would argue, is that the mission doesn't really matter. You know, the mission's just so that they can have some kind of cool backdrop to tell the story of Omega, you know, dealing with growing up and the Bad Batch, you know, grappling with how to take care of Omega and how to be kind to Omega and help her find resilience. I think it's there's a reason that this one there's a reason we just jump into this one, I would say.
I also wanted to point out the whole thing about the Ipsium. Ipsium is obviously a fake Star Wars word, but it's derived, at least I think, and I credit this to the great people at Force Center, Joseph Scrimshaw and Nat Salk and Jennifer Landa, who first pointed this out. Ipsum, which is very close to Ipsium in Latin, means him, her, or themself. So when the Bad Batch are finding Ipsium in this episode, they're also finding themselves.
Wow. That's very clever. Good, yeah, good find, good read. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean that we could end the episode there. Except yep. then we wouldn't get to talk about socialism. But
we wouldn't get to talk about there. Socialism. We would not get to talk. I would not get to do my Bernie thing.
Yeah. The real Ipsium we found were the
we're friends we made along the way.
That is basically the vibe of this episode. I will say, yes. however, before we but since we're on the topic of Ipsium, I was watching this and I was like, man, Ipsium really seems familiar. It really reminds me of the Meganite moss from some of the Legends comics, or Coaxium from Solo, or Rhydonium from Rebels.
Yeah.
You know, I think Star Wars kind of has a thing for very sensitive, volatile materials. They really yes. love, Star Wars really loves volatile minerals. They
I was going to say, Rhydonium was a good catch, because that's what I was thinking of too. Yeah. Let's see. I'm looking right now. I'm looking on Wikipedia right now. Rhydonium was a volatile starship fuel. Give me a second. Ipsium was a fuel found on Ipsodon. In its raw form, it was volatile and highly combustible.
Okay.
Let's see. Coaxium, also known as hyperfuel, was a rare form of hypermatter and a type of expensive starship fuel mined on Kessel. Do those three things not sound like the exact same thing?
They're very similar. Not to mention, I mean, Tabanagas kind of used to, at least in Legends, pretty much played the same role as well. So
I didn't know Tabana was explosive.
Maybe it's not. I don't know. Similar vein of similar. It's in a similar vein, but
the Star Wars has a bit of a thing.
Star Wars has a bit of a thing for volatile minerals.
Yes,
and mosses.
Does.
That's all. That's all.
Yes, that's all. That's all.
I just think it's funny. At
good
this
point.
Point
fantastic.
Like
good
every
point.
Like every new show or movie, it feels like every time there's something. There's
yeah,
something
and the number of times I've heard like one stray shot and we all go boom. You know, like
yeah,
that like.
That's definitely on. Like, yeah, that's there's definitely something on that. Like there's definitely like a TV tropes. There's a TV yeah. tropes for that for sure.
Oh,
and Star
sure.
Wars is probably yeah. in there quite a bit.
Oh yeah, so yeah, that's a good catch. I already love just mining the Ipsodon and not mining the Ipsium on Ipsodon. Wow, why do they make this so difficult for us? In those sequences, and when the ship gets stolen. You notice these conversations between Hunter and Wrecker and Tech, and you notice how tense they are. You notice how terse yeah. they are. You notice how short they are with each other. And Wrecker says early on in the episode to Omega, Omega's like, how are we going to deal with Echo not being around? And Wrecker goes, you'll get used to it. And then they start talking like that. I'm like, are you guys really used to it, or is that just something you're telling yourself?
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's one of those things where I think Echo's departure, and I think this is a thing for like all of the crew, but I think obviously we'll see this with Tech, is that I think all of them, because Echo was such a new member of the squad, because he hasn't been around for that long, were like, oh, we will get over this easily. But yeah. they don't. And I don't think they were ready for that idea.
Yeah. Or I think they weren't ready, at least, for how Omega would feel. For how much it would impact Omega.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Because I think, I mean, obviously we have Tech, you know, he gives his whole spiel about how he feels, or more so why he's acting the way he's acting, because Omega kind of like calls him out or kind of like asks him like, why do you seem so callous and cold about this? Why don't you care? Why can't you see how much I care and be more empathetic? And he kind of says, you know, I process
we'll get
things
to that.
Differently. Yeah, we'll get to that. But my point is, I don't think the Batch, and this is again, you know, they're new parents. The Bad Batch are new parents, basically. That's really what they are. So, you know, this is for them kind of a learning moment where, you know, growing up as clones, you know, in the very controlled environment, they never really had, and this is a whole other can of worms, but they never really had the time or space to have to process things like this because their life was so regimented.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that in the same, this is another way, in like in the same way that they're teaching Omega, that Omega's teaching them.
Oh, yeah, 100%, 100%.
I think the emotional journey of this episode is really beautiful, and I think it's something that I want to see a bit more in Star Wars. I love these interpersonal episodes where the characters have to deal with the fact that the galaxy is tough, and that life is tough, and that they have to deal with things that they might not realize or that they might not be ready to deal with.
Yeah.
Something about that is so innately relatable, but like also still so Star Wars. I love that.
I was gonna say something that makes this episode so resonant for me, and one of the reasons why I like it, is because, you know, we can all relate to, in a sense, what Omega is going through. You know, she's, how old is she supposed to be? What,
11?
11, 12,
yeah,
you know,
12,
she's growing up, and she's starting to come into a place, especially, you know, knowing who Omega is and what she's doing with the Bad Batch. She's starting to come to that phase in her life where she has more responsibility, and she kind of has a greater, more attuned awareness to the world around her and the lives of the adults around her. And obviously she's still very young. She's still a kid, but she's starting to, you know, that's an age when you start to be a little more attuned to, you start to see in very basic ways, but you do start to see kind of the complexities and the struggles of the adult world, I would say.
Yeah.
And this is, absolutely. And this is kind of her going through that.
And speaking of the whole, how Echo's leaving affects all of them. There's a little detail I forgot about these episodes is that Echo, for unknown reasons, I think Hunter speculates it's about a dangerous mission, but we really don't know. Disabled his comm. So there's really no way to get in touch with him.
He
is as good as gone. Again, we know that he will pop up again back near the end of the season, but they don't know that. And as of watching this episode, we didn't know that.
And it's definitely to the benefit of the story and the characters that we don't know that. Because this is about Omega, you know, and I guess the rest of the Batch too, but primarily Omega, you know, dealing with losing Echo. Not like losing him as in, you know, losing him in a sense where he's not quite a part of the family in the same way.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's not present in the family, I guess. So I really like this episode. I mean, obviously, I think the Bad Batch is at its best when it's very character-driven episodes. And this is an episode like that, where we really get to delve into the emotional states, the relationships, the thoughts and feelings of the Bad Batch.
Yeah,
and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, it's fantastic, especially because in the first arc, in the TCW arc, they're so caricatured.
Yeah,
and these we get to see them beyond. Oh, this guy's the strong one. This guy's the smart one. This guy is the stealthy one, you know, they're actual people and they're defined by more than just their DNA, their altered DNA, whatever modifications the Kaminoans put on them.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great storytelling, and this is not specific to the Bad Batch or Star Wars, but I do think it's a great storytelling device, and it's fun when you have a situation like this. Like, they're trapped in the caves, and they're surrounded by highly explosive materials, and their ship's stolen. But that's not at all what this that's not really what this episode is actually about.
That's not what this episode is about
at all.
It's
not what this episode is about. And I like when I think because it's a kid's show, they can't do this as often or as overtly as I would like. They can't really often make an episode, I think, as overt in terms of what the actual focus is as this episode. But I like the way the external or the situational struggle kind of mirrors the real struggle, or the most important struggle, which is the personal struggle. And
yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Kind of a backdrop, and it's not actually about the situation. And I think sometimes, I think where the Bad Batch struggles is when they lose sight of that. Like, this is basically a very similar episode to, I can't remember the episode with Fijianoa with the Heart of the Mountain.
Entombed?
Yeah, this feels similar to Entombed in some ways, except Entombed doesn't have any of the personal complexity that this episode has.
And also, Entombed spends more time on the weird, like, Indiana Jones-style puzzles. The animation in Entombed, like, is great, don't get me wrong, because it's on the level of every other Bad Batch stuff. But The Crossing, I want to say, has some of the greatest animation I've seen in this show so far. The lighting for the Ipsium, when Omega's mining it, the underwater cave scene, all of that is beautiful. It just looks breathtaking. And even for the Bad Batch, like, even for such a breathtaking series as the Bad Batch, it looks fantastic. It's just some beautiful artistry going on there. That's another one of the things I love about this episode, is that it just feels like a piece of art.
Yeah.
And 100%. Retrieval feels like an actual, like, episode of the Bad Batch. And I'm not saying that to denigrate it. It's fantastic, and I think I might actually like it better than The Crossing, personally. But The Crossing has this artistic feel that sometimes Star Wars taps into when it, like it doesn't do it too often, but when it does, it makes those moments count as, like, those visual masterpieces. I'm thinking of, like, stuff like The Child, a lot of this in the first season of Mandalorian, a lot of the cinematography in The Jedi in the second season of Mandalorian reminds me of that. A lot of Victory and Death in TCW reminds me of that. A lot of Twilight of the Apprentice, especially that ending sequence in Rebels, reminds me of that. The finale of season one of Bad Batch, Return to Kamino, reminds me of the, like, it was visual, like, just like, it's all about the visual art. It's also about the sound, the music. It's not really about the dialogue or the plot or any of that so much. It's about these sensations coming together and how they make you feel.
Oh, yeah,
The Crossing works quite well in that sense as well.
Yeah, absolutely, it does.
I actually think that's something Last Jedi does very well as well. But
yeah, I agree. Kind of creating a compelling.
It's the visual
backdrop.
Language, the visual, the visual language, the visual storytelling, the auditory storytelling. That I love. So they're scavenging some Ipsium. The ship gets stolen. Shit, that's a problem. And then the most random part of either of these two episodes come, which I understand is a plot device. I just feel like this part of the episode was just a little strange to me. I don't know if it felt this odd to you. But the stampede felt really random to me.
Yeah, that felt really kind of just thrown. I feel like that just felt like it was there just for the sake of, they threw it in there just for the sake of throwing that in there,
I
I
mean, I feel
think.
like it was, I feel like the purpose was to get them from that but point A to point B. But
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
that was it. Like, I feel like there was no other, like, other than like cool visual stuff, it didn't feel like there was any purpose to it other than, oh shit, we need to get them from the outside to trapped into a cave.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's fine sometimes
Yeah, it's fine
to have
sometimes, but
things like that.
it was, I think, the most awkward part of either of these two episodes.
It definitely was awkward and I didn't mind it because again, I thought it was just a fun, it was just a fun moment for me
Yeah,
because I
it
like
was.
the
I
Western
didn't mind it
vibe.
that much. The only thing I was constantly thinking of, and I don't know if you were thinking of this one, but they totally took this from another famous piece of animation, The Stampede. The Stampede reminded me so much, and like, once I say this, I'm hoping this is gonna happen. Once I say this, people will not be able to get this out of their heads if they've seen this movie. Because, and if anybody listening has not seen this movie, you have made a huge mistake. Go see this movie. But there's only four words I think of when I think of that stampede sequence. Long live the king. That stampede
Scar,
sequence is
brother, help me.
so similar looking to the stampede sequence and the climactic stampede sequence in the middle of The Lion King. That I remember specifically, like, watching it for the first time. I remember this a few months ago, watching it. I just said to myself in my head, long live the king. Again, I don't know how intentional it was, but I'm telling you, I'm sure there was at least some inspiration there. I always love Star Wars paying homage to things, and I love it paying homage to such a great movie like The Lion King, because that is a fantastic film. It has Star Wars talent in there with James Earl Jones as Mufasa, where of course where he says the famous line, "Simba, I am your father." No, he doesn't, but you know he could have.
He sure could have.
I'm trying to think of who, what else, what other, are there any other Star Wars connections in The Lion King? I don't think so. I think it's just James Earl Jones.
Yeah, I don't think there's any other
Oh,
involved.
Jim Cummings. Jim Cummings
Oh,
voiced one of the hyenas, and he's Hondo.
really?
Yeah.
Wow. So much overlap in the voice acting world. It's
Oh
awesome.
yeah. I like the only one person I would have been less surprised about is if D. Bradley Baker was a small role in Lion King. But. Yeah, then we get into our cave. Then we have the cave. We have our Chekhov's gun moment, of course, because, and again, the moment Tech says like something like this mineral is highly explosive, I'm like,
Yep.
that's gonna explode, right?
It's gonna explode.
It's gonna explode and it's gonna be a huge problem, right?
It wouldn't be Star Wars if something, it wouldn't be Star Wars if the mineral didn't explode. The mineral always explodes.
And, yeah, and like this reminded me of a much lesser episode than this one, but still, it reminded me of like when they're going down the cave on Ord Mantell, and Tech's like, these Earthlings, we don't want to wake them. I'm like, oh, they're gonna wake them.
Oh yeah, and that's another Star Wars trope that Bad Batch also heavily indulges in. Don't wake the animals,
Don't like the
or
animals.
don't disturb the animals
Don't
to be a
disturb
little
the
bit
animals,
broader.
and then inevitably they disturb the animals.
The things you do in Star Wars: don't go near volatile minerals, don't go in caves, don't disturb animals, don't go
Really,
near anyone wearing a black cloak. Yeah,
you can just, what was that last one?
don't go near anyone wearing a black cloak.
Oh, that's a good one. I
Always be in
really
the
it could,
same gunship as the Jedi.
as the main characters,
Don't
yeah.
be in the non-main
Yeah,
character gunship.
it just reminds me of that line of the thing Qui-Gon says to Jar Jar, when he grabs his tongue in Phantom Menace, don't touch anything. If you just follow Qui-Gon's advice, you'll be fine. Yeah, but so yeah, let's let's get to inside there and let's get to that inside that cave, and there's Tech and Omega's argument there, where, among other things, Tech goes, well, you know, the Batch existed before Echo, and it's gonna exist without Echo, and it can't exist without Echo. And that understandably ticks Omega off.
Yeah, Omega is not happy hearing that.
Yeah, because again, it's the conflict between Omega and Tech here, and the differing, like, clashing philosophies of them by Brooke Roberts, who's the writer of this episode, is just so well written. I love this because it's not like, because I understand where both of them are coming from. It's not like one of them's the good guy and one of them's the bad guy in this situation, or one of them's completely right when one of them's completely wrong. They're both right in some ways and they're both wrong in some ways.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
And I like how nuanced it is that they both have to realize that change is hard and people leaving is hard, but you have to be able to get through that without having it fundamentally change who you are.
Yeah.
You have to both, you have to acknowledge its impact, but also let go. And both of them were going a bit too far into the opposite directions. And they both had something to offer each other.
Yeah.
And I really like how it's a very poignant exchange between them. Just when she, when he says, when she says, "We are a family, aren't we?" "Yes, of course we are. Then why don't you act like it?"
Yeah, that's
just stuff like that. And there's, and it reminds me, you know, Omega spent her entire life up to about a year ago with Batch in the, with the Kaminoans, who don't really express their feelings. And so she wasn't in a society where she was encouraged to have feelings. And so seeing Tech act like the Kaminoans did, unintentionally, but still it happened, obviously will trigger something in Omega, because this is the place where she escaped to receive that love and compassion that she did not get from the Kaminoans. And Tech acting, or in her mind, maybe even regressing to being like the Kaminoans. I mean, that's going to hurt somebody.
I think that's why she reacts so strongly, because even knowing who Omega is as a character, it kind of feel like in this episode, it did feel jarring. Like, wow, she really kind of went from 0 to 100 real quick, you know, whenever the topic of Echo came up. But I think what you said makes a lot of sense, actually. And that is most likely why, where she on some level feels like she doesn't want to go back, you know?
Yeah. And just the way they interact with each other in Retrieval after they figure out this whole thing, shows this bond of implicit trust that they built from this experience.
Yeah.
That they did not have before. And sometimes you have to have these kind of hard conversations. It's not fun for anybody, but you sometimes need to have these hard conversations in order to grow and change as people. And oh fuck, I forgot. I was just saying, like, this is gonna be great for Tech and Omega in the future. And then I remembered that Tech has a death mark on his head.
Yeah. That really,
and he's going to be, as they say on TikTok, unalived by the end of this season.
Yeah. That definitely hurts. Rewatching these episodes, that definitely is very bittersweet. And I really wish that they'd kept Tech alive, because I think he had potential to be, I mean, he already was a great character. But I think by the end of the second season, he had the opportunity to do some, they had an opportunity to do something really special with him, I think.
Yeah.
Not to say that not to say that he wasn't special, that his character wasn't.
But I actually think that thinking about that now, and for some reason I completely like just blanked that out of my mind when I was watching these two episodes. I kind of forgot about it. I mean, not really. I didn't really forget about it, but like I kind of emotionally forgot about it. I think it makes both these episodes better because, again, I think the idea that before. I love the idea that before he dies, Tech is at least able to become, through things like Faster, through things like The Crossing, and through other episodes, he's able to become a better version of himself.
Mm.
That's what Tech's arc is this season for me, is being more of a fully fleshed out, well-rounded person than he was in The Clone Wars. That's what Tech's arc is to me this season.
Yeah, it definitely feels like they kind of said, we know Tech didn't get a lot of love in season one. Don't worry, we haven't forgotten about him.
Yeah,
and
we'll talk about Tech's death and the storytelling decisions behind that move when we get to those episodes. And I will defend them. But again, we'll talk about those in future episodes. But I'll just say that I think that there was purpose and meaning to Tech's death, and I like.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
How I if they were going to do it, which I think they were going to do it, I like the way they didn't like. I like the arc that they slowly and subtly built for Tech this season, while we weren't really looking. That's a really good part, is that it's like you can see it now rewatching it, and that's one of the great things about rewatching, and that's why we do this show, is that you can pick up on things that you weren't supposed to see the first time, but the second time around you are supposed to see. And then I want to get to this quote, and I remember this inspiring a huge conversation. This quote, and I'm so grateful to, again, Brooke Roberts for writing this episode, and then this specific, my God. Echo chose a different path, as did Crosshair. I have to respect their decision. Even though it can be difficult to understand, we must carry on. I may process moments and thoughts differently, but it does not mean that I feel any less than you. I remember seeing that line, hearing that line and just being so touched by it. Yeah. And then the incredible Molly Damon of Star Wars Explained, she posted on Twitter that morning something about how great it was that this was speaking to the neurodivergent fans in the Star Wars base.
Yes.
And I'm like, and immediately I'm like, that's why it hit me.
Yeah.
That is why it hit me. She got it right on the nose there. That's why I am a neurodivergent Star Wars fan. And I do struggle in a lot of situations that a lot of people might find easy interpersonally. And the idea that that this is communicating, especially because Star Wars, as we've said millions of times and as many of our friends have said, is for kids. Communicating to kids that everybody, that some people work differently, and that just because they work differently doesn't mean they are in essence any different, is such an important message. And I think that it was just the combination of seeing that and then seeing Molly's tweet and then like everything clicking in my brain for me was such an aha light bulb moment for me. And it was just like, it was fantastic.
No, I am also neurodivergent, and goes without saying that I'm a Star Wars fan. Eli and I are neurodivergent in very different ways, but obviously we can both relate to this. I feel the same way, where it was heartwarming and resonant and cathartic to see Tech get that moment of him kind of having that moment where I thought it was pretty clearly on some level, it was pretty clearly meant to be read as making a nod towards neurodivergence in all its many forms, in terms of just being able to say, just because people don't process things the same, just because people don't necessarily even experience the world in a way that would make sense to you, just because people don't display the same things, it doesn't make them any less human, and it doesn't mean that they feel things any less. It doesn't mean that what they feel and experience is any less real just because it's not what you're used to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, I think to backtrack a minute, I think another thing that really resonated with me that you just said is the idea of carrying on. And I was actually just thinking about that earlier today, because I think, and it's a very Star Wars idea, and it's especially a very it comes up a lot in The Bad Batch. It comes up in Rebels. It comes up in Kenobi a lot, I think, as well. Which is the idea of how do you carry on when shit just really sucks, or something really sucks, or everything really sucks? How do you find a way to carry on and still make your mark in some way, make someone's life a little bit better, make the world a little bit better? It doesn't have to be that. It just for yourself, how do you carry on for yourself, keep living as a unique and wonderful and valuable human being, and just sustain in moments and times when things can seem so dark. And I think I've been trying to put my finger on that about the Bad Batch for a while, especially because that's something that, especially with Omega, because that loops back to that's something that we all have to learn how to do when we're growing up, is how do we carry on? How do we live life through times of intense struggle? And so I think that's something that resonates with me a lot as well.
Yeah, it's just because change happens doesn't mean that we cannot adapt with the change. And again, that's the very Bad Batch theme of like the adapt or die sort of thing. But I also just really love the acknowledgement that yeah, this happened and it sucks,
Yeah,
and we
definitely.
get some time to deal with that. That's another thing I love about this episode, and this it feels very much like the episode from Rebels Doom to me. Where we had this huge cataclysmic thing happen in that episode. A member of the squad left us in some way. In this, it was just physically leaving. In Doom, it was obviously death.
Yeah.
And we got to grieve with the episode.
Yeah.
We got to process our emotions while the characters process theirs.
Yeah.
And I
That
think
was a
there's something
special
really,
episode.
really powerful with that.
Yeah, I think sometimes to go back to what you mentioned, the idea of carrying on through difficulties. Sometimes I think that phrase to carry on can sound like, oh, just, fasten your boots, keep going, whatever, like don't feel it, don't acknowledge it, ignore what's happening, not necessarily ignore it, but don't try to be as unaffected by it as possible. That's not really possible in a lot of ways and in a lot of situations. And I think I like that Rebels and the Bad Batch kind of, they have that balance, where Omega teaches Tech that it's okay to acknowledge your feelings and acknowledge that you don't like something. It's okay to feel that pain and let that run its course. And Tech kind of teaches Omega that, you don't have to let that become all-consuming. You don't have to let that derail you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have anything else for this episode? I just need to get the Sid part. I feel like
well,
we should talk about.
Just also gonna say that that I love the idea that of like, but like the climax of the arc is that Tech uses the Ipsium to rescue them from the cave that's surrounding them. But like, I also think of it like the cave of emotional despair, like they are trapped in their emotions, and then it's like the physical and then the emotional breakout of it at the same time. And then I think we should use our remaining time talking about this episode to say very clearly, fuck Sitter and Scaleback. All my homies hate Sitter and Scaleback.
I was
fuck
seething.
Her.
This episode had me seething.
As I said in my
notes, oh my God.
I said in my notes, fuck Sitter and quote, I owe you one after you saved me from a gangster, but refuse to pay up when you're stranded on a mission working for me, Scaleback. Fuck her.
It was a little bit of a disgrace.
I remember
a little bit of a disgrace
when we were watching when we were watching Bad Batch and when we were watching Faster earlier this season and at the end of the episode, I think it was Tech or somebody who was like, "You owe us one now," and she's like, "I'll find some way to make it up to you." And then I just sit here. I'm like, "This was your way of making it up to them? Very cool,
yeah.
Sid. Nice job." Very cool.
Yeah, man. I again. When is it gonna be? And I feel like I'm saying this on two levels. One, when is it gonna be the Bad Batch's? When is it gonna be Sid's last? Or when is it gonna be the Bad Batch's last straw with Sid?
Well,
number one, I can't remember because it's been a while since I've watched the Bad Batch season two. It hasn't been that long, but I can't remember. Number two, Bad Batch, when is it going to be your last straw? You should have had like five last straws by now.
Well,
oh
I
my
will
God.
Say that they don't do anything else for Sid between now and the finale.
Yeah, that's fair.
And they only go to Sid out of desperation that last time, and then Sid betrays them. So to their credit, I think they did figure it out. Now, we'll talk about what happens at the end of the season again in those in the next few episodes when that happens, but yikes.
Yeah. Yikes indeed.
Let's go, comrade. Let's go to retrieval.
All right, let's go to retrieval. Where do you wanna start here?
Well, I love that the fact. Well, first of all, we get the revelation very early in the episode that a kid who's Omega's age stole that ship. Instantly, that makes it like more interesting because it's not this like. It is these kids and these teenagers who are working for Mako, like they're these poor, innocent young souls who are being corrupted and forced to work for this monster.
Yes.
And I like the symbolism of that as we go into this episode, because other than Mako, the villains in this episode are very reluctant villains.
Yeah.
Like Benny, even though he betrays Omega at the end, I'm not defending him betraying Omega. I'm saying it's completely understandable why he did that. Because
yeah, I mean
it is a product of his environment and how he grew up and that kind of thing. And you can't change somebody like that fast. We'll talk to that about that when we talk about that, but I think that there's I just like I think it's really interesting the aspect of, oh, it's a kid. It's a kid whose fault this is. We also get, and I like this other factor of the episode too, where Mako's not part of the Hutts. He's not part of Crimson Dawn. He's not part of the Pikes. He's just this local like gangster.
Yeah.
Tech even says this is on like a much smaller level, like Malegi and Faster. we're not dealing with galaxy binding stakes.
Yeah. I think kind of part of the message of this episode, and they talk about it at the end, you know, in more direct terms, but you know, the Empire isn't the only bad guy in the galaxy. And the Empire enables people like Mako.
Absolutely.
In a way, because of the fact that they just the fact that they don't care, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that is, it makes sense that there is no Empire in this episode.
Yeah. It's a really interesting dynamic just doing this local crime stuff. I do really like just the fact that they're able to make the stakes feel big, even though they are smaller than usual.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the stakes, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to have massively high stakes for the stakes to be high, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I understand. You don't have to have the biggest stakes for them to matter. I agree with that. I just like the tension in this episode. That's actually what I really like about this episode, just generally tonally, is that, you know, we allowed them an episode to have the emotions and feel their feelings, and that was absolutely necessary.
Yeah,
but
now they're gonna go rock
this
out.
Episode, they're playing from behind. They're down a member, they're down a ship, and they're down an ally.
Yeah.
Time for some catching up.
They got to scramble. Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's a sense of desperation in this episode that really hasn't been felt, I feel like, at many other times this season.
I didn't really feel that in this episode personally, but
I guess in the
see where
beginning,
you're coming
from. I guess just in the beginning of, like, our ship's in there, we're down a member, we're stranded on this planet until we can do this. They're playing from behind, which is not a position that the Bad Batch usually has to play from.
Okay, I see what you mean. Yeah, I see what you mean.
I love that aspect of it. I love the stealth and the infiltration aspect of it, which is something that, again, we don't often see from the Bad Batch.
That's true.
It
felt very Mission Impossible.
Very Mission Impossible. Very, like, you know, you got to blend in and all that kind of stuff with this, with Omega bending in. I got to say, when they capture Benny at the beginning, the Bad Batch intimidating the shit out of Benny, including Omega, is hilarious to watch.
It is wonderful.
It's very much a, like, you know, we saw them, like, at their lowest and get into their feelings and all that kind of stuff. And we needed that for emotional story purposes, but it is nice to see them back in their element.
Yeah.
They're like, we're getting our fucking ship and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. Just kicking ass and taking names.
We're the Bad Batch, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
You don't cross us. You got something before we move on with the...
I mean, I think it's an interesting... Obviously, we're going to get to the socialist or the big message of this, but it's crazy how much the kids are brainwashed into believing that... Maybe brainwashed isn't the right word, but, you know, Benny and Drake and all these kids, you know, they're fighting over one bowl of soup, you know, for crying out loud. And, like, and then I think,
I mean, did you see how excited Benny was when he found that ration bar on the ship at the very beginning?
Yeah.
Did you see how excited he was, like, jumping for joy?
It's kind of interesting to go from last episode where it's all about the Batch's kind of struggles and their imperfections to now we turn around and see, you know, ways that the Bad Batch can really help some people and how the Bad Batch, you know, you know, just because they are struggling a bit to figure out the best way to take care of Omega, you know, it doesn't mean that they still aren't doing a good job, you know. I mean, looking at like oh gosh, you know, like Benny sees how the Bad Batch treats Omega, and that's what kind of makes him have second thoughts of how well they treat him.
Yeah,
So, you
absolutely.
know,
They really
food for
treat you
thought.
like one of them.
Yeah.
Is literally what he says. And then he says, "I wish Mako did that."
And there you go.
This is him realizing that Mako is it is manipulative. He's abusive, and he's greedy. One of the nice little lore details I found about this one, when they're touring around, Benny tells them that the Techno Union owned the mine. And then after the Clone War, I think the assumption is after the Clone War they lost, obviously, and
Yeah.
so they vacated the
Benny just,
mine, and then
yeah.
Mako took it over. And I love how they're two extremely different types of evil, but they're both evil.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, what Mako is doing is it's unconscionable. It's crazy.
No, it like Mako didn't make the mine any better than the Techno Union. He just made it a different kind of bad.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting place to put it in, where you can't compare the two because both of them are just so awful. I don't know, I just like that one.
No, yeah. For sure, for sure.
And then yeah, we have I love that action sequence with time stuff where they only have 60 seconds to get down the pipe before the gas pumps up.
Yeah, that part, and they
That's
actually
classic
do it
batch
in six.
action.
They actually do it in 60 seconds. You know, a
You
lot
were
of times in
counting?
these movies and shows, especially in Star Wars, yeah, they don't necessarily stick to the time that they say.
But they actually did it in 60
Yeah,
seconds?
they actually did it in 60
That's
seconds, which
fantastic. I love
I thought that
that.
was pretty fantastic. Yeah.
I love that. That felt actually very much like you were saying, that felt very Mission Impossible-esque. And Hunter's like dalliance with the droid and then slipping through. Fantastic Star Wars stealth action. Love it so much. And then we have and then we have and of course there's that great Omega line. I love this is the other thing I love with Omega. Omega has sass in this episode.
Oh
I love
yeah.
it so
Oh
much.
yeah.
The way she says "You stole the wrong ship" to Benny. Fantastic. I love that.
Yeah,
More than
she's really kind of coming
anything.
into her own in
Yeah,
this
more than
episode.
anything, this episode proves to me that she's one of the team now.
100%, 100%, yeah.
And I think that this episode showcases that really well, that she's part of the team and that she's got it. She gives no fucks, and I'm happy for her. Like that's she's living her best life out here, and frankly, she should be.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's also that line. So actually, do you have anything else you want me to start ranting?
You can rant. This episode wasn't really one of the ones that I loved as much, so fire away.
If you look on my Twitter, I don't make this. I'm not apologetic about this one. If you look on my Twitter, it says. It says in my bio that I am a leftist and democratic socialist, and I believe in those philosophies quite a bit. I've always been liberal, just in general, my ideologies, but I've been significantly over the last few years pushed even further to the left.
This is true.
But so there's a lot about class consciousness in this episode that's really fantastic to me. This is literally what Karl Marx, when he was talking about class consciousness, was talking, and the idea of a socialist society was talking about, it is the owner who is not contributing specifically to the actual physical efforts of the process, of the business, but who's reaping all of the rewards. We see that Mako, that there's that great scene where Mako has all of that expensive, I assume that's wine and like food and, you know, like, and we see, and we also see him gaslighting his thieves, where he's like, we've all had to make sacrifices, I've had to make sacrifices too. I'm like, bullshit, no you haven't.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, no you haven't. I mean, he's like purposefully hiding all of his, all the actual riches that he gets. It's
so as the meme says, so that was a fucking lie. And then we see, you know, we see the, and of course we see, this idea, this idea, which is, like, just generally, like, he keeps the working people fighting each other so they don't realize who's truly oppressing them, who's truly keeping them down.
That is, that is very clearly a part of the allegory where he's kind of pitting them. It's much less, it's less overtly political here. Obviously, it's the message, or to me, I read it that way. But yeah, it's the same fundamental idea of people are being pitted against one another.
Yeah.
And they ignore who's really responsible for their woes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then of course Benny figures out the truth. Omega gives him his own socialist epiphany, as I call it. is what happens. And then what happens? This is there's some really fantastic stuff that happens. First of all, he backtracks by saying basically, like, without me, you wouldn't be this successful, which is a classic tactic where, you know, we assume that because people got these high positions, that they're uniquely talented to get those positions and not just because they managed to find some trickery or, like, you know, they were good at saying the right things or all that kind of stuff to get into
or they position. Or they inherited it.
Or I they mean, inherited
he,
that,
the idea here is that he basically, he just like happened
he just took
to be
it.
In,
yeah.
He was in the right place,
right place
at, the
at the
right,
right time,
time.
Yeah.
In order to take over this mine.
And then Drake and Benny and all those don't seem to be buying that. And then what does he do? This is the truly genius part of the episode that was not done intentionally, but looks so fantastic now. And I only say it wasn't done intentionally because this really, like, even at the time that this episode was released, we weren't thinking about this as much. All the humans turn against him. So who does he turn to as his backup?
Droids.
The robots. And isn't it so interesting that one of the main concerns of, say, the Writers Guild of America strike right now is what?
AI.
AI. Yeah. Because AI and robots don't have emotions and don't have that agency. Again, we can talk about that in Star Wars, but whatever. Yeah,
and wasn't,
you know, in our real world, they don't have that stuff, so they can't say no to things.
Yeah.
So AI is a more, they are more efficient workers than humans are. If you're only concerned about efficiency, profit, and like the capital of it all.
Yeah.
So it makes complete sense that he's going to try and replace his workers with the robots. And that the robots are the ones keeping them in line, by the way. And that his security are all robots. Because they can never question anything. It's a great little allegory there. And then you know, at the end of the episode when they're talking, when Benny's talking about, oh, we're gonna split it all equally among themselves, I'm like, guys, this is literally the workers controlling the means of production.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
this is, like, they're not even trying to hide this anymore. And there's, and I really hope that that goes well and doesn't devolve into anything else. Because I just remember like seeing this, I'm like, this is preaching socialism, and I could not be more proud of Star Wars.
Yeah. I mean, this is nothing new, you know. George Lucas said that the prequels were all about, you know, the dangers of you know, corporate interests,
Yeah, a
you know,
corporate overreach, yeah.
in taking over politics and taking over society and countries and the world at large. So this is not, it's not surprising that Star Wars has always been, you know, in different ways, you know, making progressive commentary on
Yeah,
different
absolutely.
issues. So
I'm
this is
not
nothing
saying
new.
that Star Wars has never been like left leaning or all that kind of stuff. I will say that I think this specific area is a new one for Star Wars.
Oh yeah, no, it definitely is. Yeah.
And I'm glad to see it reaching in there. And I think that
Yeah.
and these are sophisticated topics too. That's what
Yeah.
I'm most impressed about, is that they didn't bog anything down with this one. It was very clear how this was relating to the story. It was not overcomplicated. This guy was exploiting them. He was lying to them. He was making things up about how much money he was getting versus they were. He was having them fight with each other over food and water. They overthrew him. Now they're splitting everything fairly. It's sophisticated enough that, you know, you can look for those things. But it's simple enough that kids can understand
And I think
it.
what's interesting about this too, and I don't want to rain on your parade, but I think for what it's worth, it can also totally not be read in a socialist lens, I think.
Yeah,
Like,
I
I think
there's
regardless of what the intent was, because we can guess at what the intent was, and I know you have, we have our ideas of
yeah.
what the intent may have been.
And but anyway, even so, I get your point. Yeah, this is not in a blatantly socialist like episode, but it's a key interpretation of it.
Yeah, it is.
And I like bringing that one out, especially because of this kind of stuff is stuff that I am passionate about.
Yeah.
And then I'm excited to see this is happening. I want to go back to what you were saying in the beginning, which is that tech line. Mako appears to be using his power and means as leverage over his workers. It is a similar tactic used by the Empire.
Yeah.
Top-down subjugation. Would Mako be able to do this under something like the Republic? Sure, I'm sure he would be able to do this, but it's easier for him to do it under the Empire, and more people like him are doing it under the Empire.
Yeah. And we talked about previously. I can't remember exactly when we talked about this, but we did talk about how, you know, in Star Wars, you know, late stage capitalism or corporatism or, you know, kind of corporate, verging on corporate feudalism goes hand in hand with fascism and authoritarianism.
Oh yeah,
And that is kind of mirroring the dynamics, not necessarily the same exact things, but that mirrors some of the dynamics that we can actually see in the real world.
absolutely, yeah. The corporations getting more bold and blatant with their power grabs and
Yeah.
the renewed rise of authoritarianism,
It's a
those are connected.
symbiotic relationship.
Those are connected,
Yeah,
and
totally.
you have to blind not to see that one. Yeah, and the idea that the Empire is setting an example, it's the control in government, so it's setting a lot of the controlling societal ideas. This is how you can and cannot treat people. There's that line at the beginning. I was just going through. It was just sticking out for me from Survivor, where some Imperial troopers are beating up a citizen. For no reason. And Citizen's like, you can't do that. And the Stormtrooper goes, yes, says who? And I'm like, yeah, that about hits it on the mark.
Yeah.
No one's telling them they can't do it. So that is a norm in the society.
Yeah. Like a Grint in Spark of Rebellion. He steals all the fruit and he's like, who's gonna stop you?
Yeah.
Or who's gonna stop me? Who's gonna
stop him?
He's like,
and
damn.
Then, yeah,
yeah,
and
he
then,
has a point. He has
and then
a
no
point.
One stops him until a red lightsaber protrudes through his stomach, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. I thought he got beheaded.
I think it is actually. I think I'm not sure if it's beheaded or just killed.
No, yeah, he and maybe.
I knew it was executed by the
yeah,
Grand.
They get executed by the Grand Inquisitor. They get executed
by
the Grand Inquisitor. That's
red lightsaber.
That's the main point.
I just remember, like, now I'm just thinking about back to the horrified faces of Callus and Minister Tua when that happens, and when and Steven Stan's fantastic Tarkin. From now on, failure will have consequences. And everybody
okay.
Being like, oh my god, this shit, and being like,
yeah.
Oh my god, this shit's real now.
Should,
they
yeah,
just
should just
beheaded
hit the
two
fan.
Of the main villains. Holy fucking shit.
Yeah.
This is real now, baby.
Do you have anything else for this episode? Because it's, do you want to talk about our overall thoughts?
I'll just add also that I remember specifically a review before the Bad Batch came out. Most of it came out from people who had seen the episode beforehand, talked about an Oliver Twist-esque episode. And this is very much an Oliver Twist-esque episode. I can see a lot of inspirations from Mako being the Fagin of this episode to Benny and Drake being the Oliver and the and his fellow thieves from that. And I like that little nod to that. But yeah, go ahead. What are your overall thoughts about both these episodes?
So overall, I think the crossing, my ranking is definitely the crossing, then retrieval. I think the crossing is not one of the best episodes, but definitely a standout episode. Maybe top five in this season. We'll see. But I really liked the crossing. I think it perfectly does that thing. It had an amazing backdrop, very very good story, serviceable story, visuals, music. You know, everything was there to set the stage for some really juicy, thought-provoking, personal growth, and really, you know, we get really personal with the Bad Batch in this one, and I really like that. And I think, you know, seeing Omega go through the pains and challenges of dealing with change as a part of growing up, that's something that's universally relatable, and I like episodes like this a lot. As for retrieval, this one was all right. Definitely not a bad episode. Pretty good episode. Exciting. Definitely something different. I as very interesting thematically. You know, I love that we read it to be socialist. It is definitely anti-capitalist. I love the message and themes. It's fun, but overall it just doesn't have. It's not. I just don't find it as compelling. I think, I just don't
yeah,
find it
I
as compelling.
I can exactly explain why I like Retrieval better than The Crossing. I just kind of know that I do. It's
That's
not
fair.
Like either of these two episodes. Like, again, I feel weird saying this. These are not. I don't think either of these are top five this season, which just speaks to how great this season is for me. But like I but The Crossing is fantastic. It has all the emotions it needs to have, and then The Crossing and then Retrieval for me is just a fun romp with socialist themes in it. That's what it comes down to. It's just fun, and it also has socialism in it. And I think both these episodes are perfectly good. They're very good for what they are. But now in the next episode, I'm very excited about this one. We're going to get to fucking killers of episodes. Next episode, Metamorphosis, which is the return of our friend the Zilla Beast. The Outpost, which is one of the craziest, most heart-wrenching Crosshair episodes I've ever seen. And then Pabu, which is going to hurt me the second time I watch it. I just know it's going to hurt me. I'm so excited for those three. But anything else to say before I wrap this up?
No, not at all.
But I think that's going to be it for this episode of Star Wars New Galaxy. Thank you so much for listening. Next week, we're going to be doing those three episodes, Metamorphosis, The Outpost, and Pabu. In the meantime, I would also like to talk about hyperspace. The Hyperspace Gauntlet is the Inner Galaxy Trivia Epic Confrontations next event is going to be happening 2 days from when this episode comes out. It's going to be happening on Sunday the 16th. Check it out on the Star Wars Inner Galaxy Live YouTube channel. It's going to be myself, Connor, and Boop, our three regular EC co-hosts, hosting that. Over 20 competitors, one walks away. We're so excited. We've been preparing this for this for months. It's going to be the biggest Epic Confrontations event yet, and I highly encourage you to check it out. But yeah, in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at InnaGalaxyPod, Instagram at Star Wars in the Galaxy. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts, we'll be there. If we're not, email us swinnagalaxy@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Threads, in a Galaxy Pod, I believe, as well. Actually, I just realized that I think I autopiloted. I said Instagram at Star Wars in the Galaxy. That's not true anymore. Instagram is also at In a Galaxy Pod now. I changed it. But yeah, watch EC on our YouTube channel. And I think until next time, may the Force be with you.
Always.
Always.